You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. Welcome back to the Hangar. I'm Taildragger. And today, friends, we're going to talk about one of the most remarkable chapters in aviation history, a story where the airplane wasn't a weapon, it was a lifeline, where a bunch of tired pilots and worn-out cargo planes held the line against a superpower, not with bombs, with flour, with coal, and believe it or not, with candy bars tied to little handkerchief parachutes. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, gear, apparel, and gifts for people who live and breathe aviation. If you love flying, go check them out. So pull up a chair and let me take you back to 1948. The war has been over for 3 years, but Berlin is still a broken city, rubble everywhere, buildings with their guts hanging out, and the city is divided into four sectors, the Americans, the British, the French. They each hold a piece of the western half, the Soviets hold the east, and the whole city sits like an island, 100 miles deep inside the Soviet occupation zone of Germany. Now, tensions had been building for months. The Western Allies introduced a new currency, the Deutschmark, to stabilize the economy in their zones. Stalin saw that as a provocation. And on June 24, 1948, the Soviets made their move. They shut it all down. Rail lines, roads, canals, every surface route into West Berlin, closed, blocked. 2.5 million people cut off from food, fuel, medicine, everything. The idea was simple: starve them out, force the Western Allies to abandon Berlin, let it fall into the Soviet sphere without a shot being fired. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The military planners sat down and looked at the numbers, and the numbers were brutal. West Berlin needed something like 4,500 tons of supplies every single day just to keep people alive. Coal for heating and power plants, flour for bread, dehydrated food, medicine, all of it flown in by air. And what did they have to fly it in? Douglas C-47 Skytrains, mostly. The same bird that dropped paratroopers over Normandy. Wonderful airplane, but she could only haul about 3.5 tons per trip. Do the math and you'll see the problem real quick. You'd need over 1,000 flights a day with C-47s alone. It just wasn't going to work. So they brought in the big iron. The Douglas C-54 Skymaster, 4 engines, could carry 10 tons per load, and they started pouring them into the European theater from bases all over the world. Rhein-Main Air Base near Frankfurt became the primary hub on the American side. Fassberg and Sell in the British zone handled the Royal Air Force operations. The British called their effort Operation Planefare. The Americans called theirs Operation Vittles. And together, they built an aerial conveyor belt the likes of which the world had never seen. Picture this. 3 air corridors each 20 miles wide running from Western Germany into Berlin. A northern corridor, a central corridor, and a southern corridor. And the traffic pattern was one way. You flew in on one corridor, you flew out on another. There was no holding, no circling. You got one approach into Tempelhof or Gatow or later Tegel, one approach. If you missed it, you didn't go around. You flew all the way back to your base with your load still in the airplane and you got back in line. They called it the ladder pattern. Aircraft stacked 1,000 feet apart, 3 minutes between each plane. At the peak of the operation, a transport was landing in Berlin every 62 seconds. 62 seconds, day and night. In rain, in fog, in the bitter cold of a German winter. Let me tell you what that felt like from the cockpit. You're in a C-54, heavy with 10 tons of coal. The soot gets into everything. Your flight suit, your skin, the instruments. The airplane smells like a coal mine. You're flying on instruments in weather that would keep any sane general aviation pilot on the ground. The ground-controlled approach radar is talking you down because Tempelhof sits in the middle of a city, surrounded by apartment buildings. Your approach takes you right over the rooftops, and you can see the faces of people standing on those ruined buildings watching you come in. You land. The ground crews swarm the airplane. Unloading starts before the props have stopped turning. German workers, many of them women, many of them people who 3 years ago were your enemy, hauling bags of flour and coal off your bird as fast as humanly possible. Because another airplane is 62 seconds behind you, and another one behind that. 12 minutes, that's how fast they could unload a C-54 and get it moving again. Some of these pilots were flying 3 round trips a day. The fatigue was unimaginable, and the flying was dangerous, not from enemy fire. The Soviets never actually shot at the transports, though their fighters would buzz them, and there were searchlights and other harassment. No, the danger was the sheer relentless pace, the weather, the mechanical strain on airplanes that were being worked harder than they were ever designed to be worked. 31 Americans died during the airlift, 39 British, and a number of Germans on the ground, crashes on approach, engine failures. mid-air incidents in those packed corridors, these were real losses. Real people who gave their lives not in combat, but in an act of sustained, stubborn, extraordinary generosity. Now, let me tell you about a young pilot named Gale Halverson. Lieutenant Halverson was a C-54 pilot out of Mobile, Alabama. He'd flown transport missions during the war, and he was good at his job, quiet, unassuming. The kind of pilot who shows up, does the work, doesn't make a fuss. One day in July of 1948, he had some free time between flights. So he grabbed his handheld movie camera and went out to Tempelhof to film the operations. And at the end of the runway, pressed up against the fence, he saw a group of about 30 kids, German children, thin, ragged, watching these big airplanes come in with wide eyes. Now most American GIs would toss candy or gum to kids. It was practically tradition by that point. But Halverson noticed something different about these Berlin children. They weren't begging, they weren't pushing and shoving, they were just standing there watching. And one of the older kids said something to him in broken English. She said, "Don't worry about us, we can get by on little food. But if we lose our freedom, we'll never get it back." That hit him hard. He reached into his pocket and found two sticks of Wrigley's Double Mint gum. That's all he had. He broke them in half and passed them through the fence, and the kids who got pieces shared them. The ones who didn't get any held the wrappers to their noses just to smell the mint. Halverson stood there, and something clicked inside him. He told those kids, "Listen, tomorrow when I fly over, I'm going to drop candy for you." And one of the kids said, "How will we know which airplane is yours?" There were hundreds of them, and Halverson said, "I'll wiggle my wings." That night back at Rhein Main, he and his crew, Sergeant Herschel Elkins and Engineer John Pickering, they pooled their candy rations. Halverson's idea was simple: tie the candy to little parachutes made from handkerchiefs, then drop them out of the flare chute as they came in on approach to Tempelhof. Next day, coming in over the rooftops, he wiggled his wings and three little parachutes floated down to those kids at the fence. He did it the next day too, and the next word got around. The crowd at the fence got bigger. Halverson kept it quiet, didn't tell his commanding officers because frankly he wasn't sure it was exactly regulation behavior. But then a German newspaper got hold of the story. A reporter had seen the little parachutes coming down. The headline was about this mysterious pilot they called Der Schokoladenflieger, the chocolate flyer. Others called him Onkel Wackelflügel, Uncle Wiggly Wings. When Colonel Howley, the American commandant of Berlin, heard about it, word went up the chain fast, and it landed on the desk of General William Tunner, who was running the whole airlift operation. Now Tunner was a logistics genius, a no-nonsense guy who lived and breathed efficiency. Halverson figured he was going to get chewed out, maybe grounded. Instead, Tunner looked at the situation and saw something brilliant. This was the best public relations the airlift could ask for. He called Halverson in and said, "Keep doing it. But from now on, we're going big." And that's how Operation Little Vittles was born. Candy started pouring in from all over the United States. Schools held drives. The American Confectioners Association donated tons of chocolate and gum. People all over the country made little handkerchief parachutes by the thousands. By the end of the airlift, over 21 tons of candy had been dropped over Berlin. 21 tons from little parachutes out of cargo planes. Halverson went from an anonymous first lieutenant to one of the most famous pilots in the world. The Germans loved him. The American press loved him, and most importantly, the children of Berlin loved him. He got sacks of mail. Kids drew pictures of his airplane with the wiggling wings. One letter was addressed simply to Uncle Wiggly Wings, America, and the Postal Service found him. But let me be clear about something. This wasn't just a feel-good story, it was strategic. The candy drops changed the entire emotional narrative of the airlift. Up until then, it was a grim logistical struggle. Tons and statistics and geopolitics. Halverson made it human. He gave the newsreels something to show that made people back home care. Made them understand that this wasn't about sectors and zones and Cold War chess, it was about kids. Hungry kids who just wanted a piece of chocolate and a future. The airlift kept going through the fall, through the winter. And that winter of 48 to 49 was brutal. Fog so thick you couldn't see your wingtip. Ice on the runway, airplanes breaking down faster than they could be repaired. There were days when the tonnage dropped dangerously low, and people wondered if it was going to work. But they kept flying. The Americans, the British, even some Australian, New Zealand, and South African crews. They figured out better unloading techniques. They improved the ground-controlled approach radar. They built a whole new airport, Tegel, in the French sector, using volunteer German labor. Built it in less than 90 days, including a runway that was, at the time, the longest in Europe. And by the spring of 1949, they weren't just meeting the minimum. They were exceeding it. On one single day, April 15, 1949, the airlift delivered nearly 13,000 tons in what they called the Easter Parade, 13,000 tons in 24 hours by air. In 1949, With propeller-driven airplanes and no GPS, no modern automation, just skill, guts, and a ground control system held together with determination. On May 12, 1949, the Soviets quietly lifted the blockade. They'd been beaten, not by tanks or threats, but by the persistence of pilots who would not stop flying. The airlift continued for several more months as a precaution, officially ending on September 30th. When you tally it all up, the numbers are staggering. Over 277,000 flights, 2.3 million tons of cargo, the vast majority of it coal, by the way, not food. People forget that. Berlin would have frozen to death before it starved. Coal kept the power plants running, kept people warm, kept the city alive. Now, Gail Halvorsen. He went on to have a long and distinguished Air Force career, retired as a colonel, but he never stopped being the candy bomber. He went back to Berlin many times over the decades. He was there for the 50th anniversary in 1998, and the Germans treated him like a returning hero. He did candy drops at air shows well into his 90s. He passed away in February 22 at the age of 101.
I had the privilege of hearing Colonel Halvorsen speak at an air show. Oh, must have been about 15 years ago, and I'll tell you what struck me. This man had no swagger, no bravado. He stood up there in front of a crowd of thousands and he talked about those kids at the fence. His voice got thick when he described the girl who told him freedom mattered more than food, and he said something I've never forgotten. He said, "It wasn't about the candy. The candy was just the method. It was about letting those kids know somebody cared. That they hadn't been forgotten. That's what aviation can do." We talk about horsepower and range and useful load and approach speeds, and all of that matters. But what the Berlin airlift showed the world is that the airplane is the most powerful tool of compassion ever invented. It can reach people that no road can reach. It can sustain a city that a hostile power has tried to strangle. It can drop chocolate on a handkerchief parachute to a child who has known nothing but war and hunger and fear. And for one moment, that child looks up and sees a pair of wings waggling in the sky and knows that somebody up there is thinking about her. That's why we fly, friends. That's why this all matters. Today's stories drew from historical accounts published by the Air Mobility Command Museum, the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library, and the wonderful oral histories collected by the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation. Colonel Halvorsen told his own story in his memoir and in countless interviews over the years. We're grateful for all those sources. And as always, Radio Hangar is an AI-generated program, brought to you by folks who love aviation and want to share that love with you. If you want to learn more, head over to radiohangar.com. This is Taildragger. I hope that story stirred something in you the way it stirs something in me every time I think about it. Next time you look up and see an airplane overhead, remember what those wings are capable of, not just flight, but hope. Fly safe out there, and I'll see you next time in the hangar. Radio Hangar, keep the blue side up.